Okay. Hello and welcome to the Michael Mamas Show. I'm Michael Mamas, and we're coming to you from Mount Soma in Western North Carolina. Mount Soma is home of the Sri Someshwara Temple and Mahashivaratri this weekend. A lot of people are coming, and the other night, you know, is the night when everybody stays up late, and it's been amazing, very powerful. And, you know, with the temple being here year after year, it gets more and more powerful. I think since 2011 it was. And it's just amazing to witness, you know. I forgot there was a time change, so I rushed and made it in the nick of time here. What we're going to talk about today is gold. You know, it's interesting how throughout the ages, gold has been treasured and revered, and for different reasons. I would say primarily in the world today, it's because it's worth money. It's considered valuable, but it's so much more than that. Of course, people like gold and jewelry. People like, I knew a dentist once who was in, had a dental laboratory. So he worked with gold, and he was telling me, and he wasn't, I don't think, spiritually oriented at all or anything like that. But he was just talking about working with gold. He said, there's something about it, you know. It's just the way it moves, the way it flows when you, you know, melt it and that, when you work with it. And he was just enamored by it. And so many people feel that way about gold for one reason or another. But it goes so much more deeply than that. And that's really what we're going to talk about today. You know, when life is fully integrated, everything changes. And like that guy, he knew about gold, he loved gold, he saw it flowing. But the whole integration, I mean, what is gold? How does it fit into the big picture? You know, it was Isaac Newton who said that if you could understand but one grain of sand, you would understand the whole universe. And so everything is a portal to the transcendent, a portal to the totality of all knowledge. But some of those portals, we could say, are more perhaps compelling or more accessible or more useful, if we can use that word, than others. And the portal of gold, the golden portal, you know, is a remarkable knowledge. Now, we're going to talk about it today, and we'll give some intellectual understanding, some feeling. But one thing that's really important, and I think people, a lot of people miss this regarding spirituality in general, is that knowing about something, knowing about the ancient secrets of gold and what it is, for example, knowing about it is one thing, but that's a good beginning to spiritual understanding. But it's all too often mistaken for the end, for the goal, if you will. When all the pieces of the puzzle of life come together, it's not about them coming together intellectually. That's a good first step. But when you awaken to that totality of life, that wholeness of life, within the depth of your being, everything changes. And it gives a context for everything we do in life that transforms everything in a manner that is in harmony with Mother Nature, in harmony with all of nature. And, you know, we really don't, we see too often that, I call it the I get it syndrome. If people, you know, have a certain intellectual understanding, then they decide they get it. And they want more and more intellectual understanding. You know, there's a, what would you call it? Just a saying in India that the mind is like a monkey. It just jumps from one limb of a tree to the next, you know? And really, I'm using the analogy here a little differently, but we do the same thing with our knowledge. We think if we can jump from one fact to another, like a monkey jumping from tree to tree, and if we can accumulate enough facts and enough knowledge, then we get spirituality. We understand spirituality. All too often, people will do that, and they get a PhD in Sanskrit or whatever, and they think they're a spiritual being. Well, no, they may know a lot of facts, but that's far, far, far secondary to integrating the physiology so you become an embodiment of pure knowledge, transcendental knowledge. Now, that underlying basis that integrates everything, the foundation, kind of sort of like the root of a tree, you might say, the foundation of all life and existence is called Chaitanya. Chaitanya is oftentimes translated as the transcendent, pure isness, pure no-thingness, that which, pure consciousness, that which underlies all things, but is beyond thingness, you see? And gold is, we talk about mappings and how things map. The typical mapping is like, that I use to illustrate the notion of mapping is in reflexology. The foot maps onto the rest of the body. The big toe is the head, the heel is the pelvis, you know, and you can find all the different organs on the foot. And reflexologists, I remember when I was living in Manila for a while in the Philippines, there's a large Chinese community there. And there was a Chinese doctor there that did reflexology. And I mean, these are like MDs of China, you know, and you'd go see him. And if you tried to tell him what was wrong, he was offended. He wanted to push on your foot. And from that, and if you, how you reacted, if it hurt or whatever, he could tell what was wrong. And then he would tell you what was wrong with you, you know, and he was great. He was great. I actually sat with him for a long time, just watching him diagnose one person after another. It was really fascinating. And he helped people just by removing the blocks in the foot, remove the blocks in the whole body, you see. So that's an example of mapping. Chaitanya, the pure transcendent, maps onto gold. Gold is then, in that mapping sense, the transcendent. Now, deep inside everything and every being is what? Our transcendental basis. We may not have a clear perception of it, but we have a sense of it. We know there's something deep inside. The kingdom of heaven dwells within. And there's something there we all just instinctually protect. And it's an inner knowing. So in a sense, we all already know everything. But the question is the clarity of perception, the degree of integration. You see? And that's why, even though we may not know it intellectually or even feel it in our being, we at least sense it, that there's something about gold, you see, that transcends just its monetary worth, you know? So gold maps onto Chaitanya. Interestingly enough, you know, you got the pure transcendent, which is pure isness, pure oneness, but then it interacts with itself, doesn't it? They call it the self-interacting dynamic of pure consciousness. And that creates an underlying structure, an underlying basis to all existence. That's called the cosmic intellect, buddhi. And that maps on, another interesting mapping here, that maps onto the DNA and the physiology. There's an intelligence, there's a structure that is the foundation of the structure of the whole physiology. You could also compare it to like a seed. Contained within the seed is the knowledge of the whole tree. And it's in the Upanishads, Yajnavalkya. Anyway, Yajnavalkya, I think. Anyway, they talk about, but if you look at the seed, crack the seed open, it's hollow. And that's, they use that as an analogy to show that the source of all things is no thingness, pure emptiness, pure isness. So it's all quite beautiful. Now, one of the fascinating things about gold is it's the only metal. It's the only metal that has what they say, no dosha. Dosha means imbalance. And dosha then, like so many words, if not all words in Sanskrit, has different meanings on different levels. So dosha can mean impurity in a metal. It can mean impurity in a person's physiology, different doshas, you know, like that. But gold is the only element that has no dosha. It's pure. And you can feel it, really. That's why people, that's one of the reasons why instinctually people value gold. They can feel that Chaitanya value in it. They can sense the purity of it. Even silver, platinum, they all have some dosha. So now it's also interesting that in the Vedic literature, what you'll find, some places you'll find gold is Shiva. Some other place you'll find gold is Lakshmi. And, in the West, that can be a problem, kind of like in the Puranas, you know. In the Puranas, it talks about the greatest, in the Shiva Puranas, it says, starts with Shiva's the greatest god, all the others god bow down to Lord Shiva. And then in the Vishnu Puranas, Vishnu's the greatest god, all the other gods bow down to Lord Vishnu. With a Western kind of mind, you look at that and say, well, that's a contradiction. Which is it? But those are simultaneously valid. It's like, I remember when I was in the ninth grade in my algebra class, there was a picture on the front of the my algebra book. And if you looked at it one way, it looked like it was a picture of two boxes. But then you could look at it another way, and it looked like it was three boxes. Both are simultaneously valid. And all of the universe is structured like that. So in some places, you'll read about gold, and it says gold is Lakshmi. In other places, well, gold is Shiva. Well, which is it? Well, it's both, you see? But now it even gets more interesting than that, I think, because they say that when you drop the physical body, if you have the name of God on your lips, then what happens is the attendants to that particular deity come and get you and bring you to heaven. But where do they bring you? They bring you to Chaitanya. They bring you to the transcendent, the pure transcendent. Now, that's one way. You know, here's the, I was just the other day driving by the temple, and, you know, a lot of people were there, Mahashivaratri, you know, and there was a boy. He was a teenager. He was Indian, but he was standing outside, and you could just tell by the way he was looking, the way he was acting. He was uncomfortable. He wasn't into it, you know. And I felt like stopping the car and getting out and talking with him, because there's a rationale. You see, that's the beauty of Vedic knowledge too. It has the personified side, which is, you know, the attendants come and get you and like that, or the different gods with their different personalities. But there's also not just the personified, but there's also the objective, the scientific side. And they seamlessly merge. And I really felt like that kid, you know, I mean, I'm being presumptuous here, but I think his parents were probably born in India and very much into Vedic tradition and all that. And he was probably moved here and they had him and he was born here. And so he can't really relate to the Vedic tradition. But what I have found is that if you give that intellectual understanding of what it is, then these things like, you know, this god that looks like a monkey or what have you, it starts to make sense. And that changes everything. And I know I've given my lectures to groups, and people have come up afterwards. And I remember one lady in particular, I'm just thinking of in the moment. She said, my daughter, she said, Mom, you know, after she heard my talk, she said, Mom, it finally makes sense, you know? And that's what has to happen. We need to have an understanding. It needs to make sense, particularly because of the way people function and are trained to function in this age. And I really feel if I stopped and talked to that kid, I could have given him the intellectual understanding. You know, there's a structure contained within the unified field, one and multiple structures all superimposed. That's what the Shiva Yantra up there on the wall, Sri Yantra up there on the wall. That's what it represents, all sorts of superimposed geometric structures. And some of those geometric structures correlate to, all of them really, correlate to some personified quality. And one of those personified qualities, you could say, looks like a monkey. It does. And so why do we have monkeys in the world today? Because it echoes out through the manifestation of existence. All those things, lions, human beings, those things are contained in seed form within the absolute. You see, so it's not just some arbitrary, oh, let's make a god and make him look like a monkey. No. And where does this knowledge come from then? It comes from cognition, Vedic cognition. And who cognized the Veda? The rishis. The rishis, again, what rishis are, it's another lecture, but to say it succinctly, they're structured in the absolute. They're the upholders of Dharma, the upholders of the structure that upholds our whole propancham, our whole, what in the West they call our whole universe, you see? And so the rishis had these very pure physiologies, obviously. And in ancient times, they walked the earth. The personified correlate was in a physical body, walked the earth, and they cognized. In other words, they recognized, they perceived. And it's even more than that. They became like channels that allowed the impulses of the nature of the structure, the self-interacting dynamic of existence to well out through their physiology, out their vocal cords. That's called Vedic cognition. And that Vedic cognition, the cognitions are pregnant with knowledge. And there you can find in the Veda where it talks about gold and it explains what it is and how it fits into the structure of the universe and how it maps onto Chaitanya, you know, and how it maps onto that through different portals. The portal of Lakshmi is gold. The portal of Shiva is gold, like that. So there's sense to it. And that little girl, when she went to her mom, she said, "Mom, it finally makes sense. I explained the whole thing about the different gods and the unified field and how that maps onto quantum mechanical realm and in modern physics and on and on." And that's what we need to do. I know some pundits, I think they were even with the Shankaracharya, were debating, you know, what do we do? These kids are turning their back on spirituality. What can we do about it? And I guess one suggestion came up, teach them Sanskrit. Well, the Sanskrit is great, and I get what they're saying there. But the thing is, there's no motivation, I don't think, for the kids to go through what they have to go through to learn Sanskrit. But if you give them an understanding first, if they understand that Sanskrit is the language that is structured within that self-interacting dynamic of pure consciousness, that's why we call it a pure language. And the name contained in the name is the form, meaning that Pushpam means flower, and that word embodies within its very vibration, its very structure, the essence of what a flower is, you see? And so all of that is going on. And back to gold now, and this is a very interesting, this is all so interesting. There's a sutra in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. And what those different sutras do, well, they do a lot of things, but one of the things they do is they enliven in the awareness these particular qualities, these particular structures, these particular values inherent within that cosmic infinite structure that holds all structures, you see, within the unified field, pure intellect, cosmic intellect. And so by doing the different sutras, Patanjali Yoga Sutras, you can enliven in your awareness these different values. And one of the sutras for moon, it enables into the awareness the perception of the structure of our universe, our propancham, okay? And what that looks like, it's all very interesting. It looks like a flower, kind of like morning glories, you know how they are? It kind of looks like that. But then there's also an unmanifest sort of, for lack of a better, I don't know if in the West they would correlate that to dark matter, or I don't know what. But anyway, and then it curves around and goes back in. And so it kind of has a shape sort of like an apple. Actually, it's called the Hiranyagarbha. And now people hear that and they wonder about, is that physics? Does that mean that space is curved in the structure of a Hiranyagarbha? And we need to understand that these things are mappings. They map. The correlation isn't necessarily they're doing some work outside out here. The correlation isn't necessarily direct. It can be indirect. And so the structure can be a Hiranyagarbha within the underlying structure of existence itself. But when it manifests into relative existence, it can look differently. But the interesting thing is, at the core of the Hiranyagarbha, the very seed of it, the center of it, is gold. It's gold. And we're not just talking theory here, because if you refine the physiology enough and you do that sutra, you actually perceive these things. You perceive the shape, you perceive the gold in there, and so there's a reality to it, because you perceive these things before you knew it intellectually, you know. Nobody has to tell you that gold is in there, and then you do that sutra, and then, oh, yeah, I see gold there. No, it's the opposite. And that becomes a very profound validation of your experiences, too, because you do these different sutras, you have these different experiences, and then you find out that that's the predicted result of Maharishi Patanjali for when you do that particular sutra. So it's all very, very real is the point. It's all very real. Now, a couple of interesting points about gold. Pundits always have some gold touching their body. And one reason they do that is because there's no dosha in it. And so it enlivens that value of total purity within the physiology itself, you see? And also, they don't, and it's good not to wear gold below the waist. All gold, if you're going to wear it, it should be worn above the waist, you know? Now, here's a really fascinating thing about, there's so much I want to say, and I go off on these tangents, but I could go, there's no end, you know? I could go for hours on how all this is correlated. But, in the Ramayana, Ravana, who was, Lord Rama's adversary, it's a very interesting thing. If you look at all the different incarnations of divinity, I mean, you got Christ, you got Krishna, you got, the list goes on and on, right? They all had adversaries. There was one demon that just hated Lord Krishna, and look what they did to Christ. And the question, why? If these people are such incarnations of divinity, shouldn't everybody just bow down and revere them just spontaneously? And but there's that principle. I've talked about this before. Positive creates negative. Why? Because this is the field of relativity. That's why they call it relativity. It's all relative. So if you have positive, then you're going to have negative to keep it balanced. The whole universe is balanced in that way. And in different ages, those qualities dwell in different places. In Satyuga, purity dwells within people, and all the negativity is in some Rakshasa somewhere on some other planet. In this age, Kali Yuga, the Rakshasas dwell within people. You see? So we have that duality value. I've got so many things going through my head here. I want to share them all. I hope I get to them all. So Ravana, in Lanka, you know, Sri Lanka, used to do Sri Rudram to a gold lenga. Because here's the thing, some lingas are made out of granite. In temples, commonly, the lenga is made out of granite. The reason for that is that granite acts to, how would we say it, dissolve karma. So people come there and they get, you know, purification of their bad karmas, if you will, you know. And all the different things, crystal linga, you get a linga made out of the different gemstones and different things like that. But a gold linga, what it does is it radiates that Lakshmi value because it's gold. And so Ravana did a Sri Rudram to a gold linga every day. And what that did is it radiated the Lakshmi value throughout the environment. That's why he had this incredibly beautiful palace. There's a whole section of the Ramayana described about when Hanuman went down there to save Sita, you know, and he was looking at this incredible, beautiful palace. Why? Because by doing Sri Rudram to the gold linga, it radiated that Lakshmi value, which is abundance, prosperity on all levels, not just money, but prosperity of life. Sometimes that Lakshmi value is compared to like a beautiful spring or summer day when all the vegetation is abundant and the sky is blue and the clouds are white and puffy and everything's beautiful. That's the Lakshmi value. So this kind of gets to what we're doing. And Pandaji and I are really excited about this. What we're going to do is we're going to create a gold lenga. It's just going to be a couple inches long, big enough. And every day in perpetuity, our pundit, right now it's Pandit Prasad, but throughout perpetuity at Mount Soma, every day we're going to do this Sri Rudrabhishek and also some mantras for gold with this gold lenga. And it's a technology. You know, again, there's a personified correlate to it. There's a personified to it. And there's a scientific side to it. There's a technology to it. With these mantras that came from the cognitions, you see, that value of gold radiates out. And so people are donating, and all the money, every penny that comes in will go to directly into the lenga. It won't go anywhere else. First, we'll accumulate it, but once we have enough, we'll have that lenga made. And then Pandaji will do those ceremonies every day. And according to the Veda, according to Pandaji, then that benefit of that quality of doing that Sri Rudram to the gold linga every day will go to all the people who donated to the Shiva linga in perpetuity. That will go on indefinitely. So it's a great opportunity. And I talked about it. I mean, for a beginning, we're about, I think we're over a tenth of the way there just from that little mentioning of it. So we're hoping to get the rest and we can do this and it'll bring abundance to everybody involved and to Mount Soma. And it's a technology. So if you're interested, you can go to the website, shrismeshra.com, or you could just go to michaelmamas.com. And if you scroll to the bottom, there's a place there where if you want to donate, click here and you can click there and it'll take you to the page and you can donate online. If you do that, be sure you send us an email. You can send it to me at michaelmamas.net. There's a place you can email me directly, or you can do it on the donation page. But just indicate that, you know, this is for the Shiva Linga, because we're going to have a list of all your names and we're going to give it to Pandaji. And so they'll have it, all the people that donated to the gold linga. And what we're asking is that it be multiples of $108. So minimum donation of the gold linga is $108. If you want, you can do double that. Somebody already did 10 times that. And so that's, I think it's just an outstanding opportunity, you know, perpetual benefit, you know, for you, and it'll radiate your family and all like that, you know. Scott Davalos is with us here today. Scotty, do you have anything to add or any comments or questions?
No, it was good.
Yeah. All right. Here's another thing I want to say. It's got it in my notes here. They talk about the Sumerians. You know, they were in Iran, Iraq. That was all part of India thousands of years ago, you know. And somebody got the ancient, what is it, cuneiform? Is that what it's called? Their writings. And they talk about how the Sumerians, among other things, they talk about how they sought gold. And they pursued gold. And they wanted gold. And they taught the people there how to mine for gold. Because the Sumerians had the people who came from, came from above, and they interpret that as UFOs, and they then trained the Sumerians to mine for gold. Now, coming from above, here's the physiology. They talk about the crown chakra, right, and how that is where, actually, when a child is born, they incarnate through as a spiral into the physiology, through the crown and then all the way into the root chakra. That's how incarnation happens energetically. And so also when enlightenment comes, it kind of crashes in through that same pathway. And that's what the Sumerian texts were talking about. And they talked about, you know, what happened to some people, if you will, became enlightened. And it came from above. And they talked about, oh, it came from above. And so now people look at those Sumerian texts thousands of years later and think they're talking about UFOs, you know. And then their pursuit of gold and wanting everybody to mine for gold. What's that about? Gold. Chaitanya. Find it within yourself. Pursue gold. You know, like that. It is so much more than just the material gold. But yes, the material gold does map. You see how that all works? So much of the ancient literature is misinterpreted. And here's the thing. Like I say, knowledge is structured in consciousness. I call this series Ancient Secrets Revealed. Why? Because the Vedic texts are there. They're available to everybody. You can go buy a copy of translations, you know, anywhere, just about any books. But the reason they're called ancient secrets isn't because they're hidden away. It's because even after you read it, even after you study it, the deeper knowledge of it still remains a secret to you. You see? All too often people, oh, I read the Veda, I get the Veda, I can even recite, I've even memorized this verse or that verse or what have you. And that's great, but it's still just a certain level of knowing. So when you really know Veda, you find it within yourself. And the knowledge in every verse of Veda is infinitely correlated, infinitely integrated with the totality of all knowledge. Kind of that idea, if you knew one grain of sand, you'd know the whole universe. Like that, contained within every verse, every shloka, every syllable, every letter of Vedic cognitions is knowledge of the totality. And it's something that to know it, it has to be structured in the physiology. It's not an intellectual thing. And that's why I say that echoes of truth hold truth at bay. And we call that the I get it syndrome, you see? Okay, I think that's enough for today. Please go to michaelmamas.com, scroll down, make the donation and let us know. Send us your name. So that I want a list of all the people that donated to that, to the Gold Linga, so that the pundits will have it in the temple forever, you know? Okay, I guess that's all. Scotty, if there's nothing else, I think we're done for the day. And thanks, everybody, for listening.